April 14th, 2024. I'd like to together talk about Haggadah Shel Pesach a little bit more than we did last week, maybe a few more days, be able to develop it and understand it on a deeper level so that we're ready in a way that we never were before for Pesach. Yesterday in the class, we talked about the difference between Zechirat Yisiyah Mitzrayim and Sipur Yisiyah Mitzrayim. I'd like to briefly return to that and then develop that contrast or that significance for the holiday of Pesach further. You see, the Gemara, the Mishnah really, in Masechet Berachot and Daf Yod Bet Amud Bet, which we refer to, we recite in the Haggadah Shel Pesach, describes how Ben Zoma had a derasha. If you recall, Rabbi Elazar ben Azariah, we usually focus just on that first part, Hare ani keben shiv'im shana. What does that mean? He was like 70 years old. We understand the historical context, etc. But what about the derasha that he cites afterwards? He says, Ben Zoma had the following derasha. Pasuk says that you should remember Yitzhiyah Mitzrayim kol yemei hayecha. The word kol, all the days of your life. That extra word kol teaches us something beyond the simple interpretation. On the one hand, the pasuk says, remember Yitzhiyat Mitzrayim every day of your life. Kol yemei hayecha, according to Ben Zoma, one of the rabbis from the Mishnah, lehavi, it comes to include, excuse me, not lehavi, lelot, it comes to include nights as well. Said Rabbi Elazar ben Azariah, with that interpretation of Ben Zoma, he understood there's a nightly obligation to mention Yitzhiyat Mitzrayim, which of course we do. When we pray Arbit, we say Kiryat Shema finishes with mention of Yitzhiyat Mitzrayim. The basic question that in turn, in the last several hundred years at the very least, many have been debating and deliberating and talking about is, well, if we do that every night, well, then what's significant about Leil Pesach? I know we have Masa, and we have Arba Kosot, and Maror, etc. But this mitzvah called Sipur Yitzhiyat Mitzrayim, what's unique about it? We do that, or we're supposed to do that every night of the year. There are many answers suggested to for this. In the book Emek Beracha, he cites from Rab Chaim Soloveitchik three different approaches. He says either the mitzvah of Zechirat Yisya Mitzrayim is just about mentioning, the mitzvah of Sipur Yisya Mitzrayim is about elaborating. In other words, one is just about mentioning. I mention a pasuk in Kiryat Shema. The other, Sipur, what we do on Pesach is about Kol HaMarbe L'Saper HaRezeh Meshubach. It's about a Sipur, it's about talking even further. Alternatively, it's the structure, the syntax, the way in which you do it. Whereas throughout the year, it's just a sentence. On Leil Pesach, it's Derech She'ela U'Teshubah. It's a Mishnah in Pesachim. We do that. We ask questions and we give answers. The third answer he suggests is that whereas when it comes to Zichirat Yisya'a Mitzrayim, we just mention it again. When it comes to Sipur Yisya'a Mitzrayim, we need to explain the reasoning. Rabban Gamliel used to not only mention the three things that we do as the mitzvot on the night, but he used to explain why. Now, some go further and suggest that the night is a night of Hallel. We praise on this night as opposed to every night we just mentioned. But fundamentally, there are many differences between Zechirat Yisya'a Mitzrayim and Sipur Yisya'a Mitzrayim. Again, Zechirah being done on a daily, nightly basis, and Sipur being done on this night. They all seem to revolve around one aspect, and that is the elaboration. The fact that we do it in a particular way. We tell stories, we speak to another. Derech She'ela U'Teshubah, you need another person present on the night of Pesach, etc. In the class yesterday, Albert Dweck mentioned another suggestion. And I mentioned to him that this is widely debated, and it goes like this. On the first page in front of you, whether you find the words or not, there's this long, small font called Peri Megadim. Peri Megadim was written by Rabbi Yosef Te'omim, who was a very important several 300-400 years ago, Eastern European Polish rabbi, and his commentary to Shulchan Aruch is very significant. He wrote a commentary on Orach Chaim, he wrote a commentary on Yoreh Deah, which is used by anyone who intensely studies halakha. Anyway, it's on the side of the page in Shulchan Aruch. His introduction to Hilchot Kiryat Shema is pretty lengthy, and in the middle of this, I don't know how many lines down, maybe about 25 lines down, the first word in the line is ve'aseh, and if you just count maybe 8-9 words onto the line, it says v'nomar od. It says v'nomar od desover haramzal ki lema'an tizkor yom se'etecha me'eris misraim kol yemei hayecha zechira balev sage v'day bekach. U'beleil pesach sarich shi'agid ba'peh kedichti v'gadda lebinecha distam hagada name bepeh. That's a two-line answer to this issue. First and foremost, he's contending with as well. There's a well-known question, Harambam, who of course enumerates 613 mitzvot in his Sefer HaMitzvot. He counts the mitzvah of Sipur Yitzya Mitzrayim, again, done on the night of Pesach, but he doesn't count the mitzvah of Zechirat Yitzya Mitzrayim, which we do every night. That's a conundrum as well. Why not? But here's the point we want to bring forth. According to Perim Megadim, there's a fundamental difference between the two. Whereas when it comes to Zechirat Yitzya Mitzrayim, which we do on a nightly basis, that could be done just in our mind. After all, listen to the word. Lema'an tizkor. Tizkor means to remember. As a result, it could or should be sufficient even to just remember. We happen to do it with our mouth. V'higadal b'necha, which is done on Leil Pesach, that has to be done b'peh. That's necessary that our mouths, in an oral, auditory fashion, recite these words. We speak to another as opposed to just thinking or having some sort of intellectual exercise where we remember what happened. That's a fundamental difference. It's mentioned similarly in She'elot Tishbot Hatam Sofer in Siman Tetvav in Orach Chaim. This is far from being accepted, but it's a significant statement. It's far from being accepted because notably She'agat Aryeh in Siman Yod Gimal disagrees with this, brings many proofs that even Zechirat Yisya Mitzrayim needs to be bepeh. But the words do suggest something along these lines. Zechira means memory. As a matter of fact, we just a few weeks ago fulfilled the mitzvah of Zachoret Asher Asa Lecha Amalek. We didn't come to Knis and just think about it. We did read it with our mouths. But that's because of a derasha. The Gemara in Masechet Megillah, Daf Yod Het says, Zachor would be balev, meaning in my mind or in my heart. What's lo tishkach? The Pasuk says by Zechirat Amalek, two things, to remember and to not forget. So the understanding is, one is to tell me in my mind, and the other one is to tell me with my mouth. If I didn't have such a derasha, Zachor would seem to imply it's just with my mind. Which means to say, and here's the critical point, there seems to be a notion, at the very least with regards to the words in the Torah, halakha not per se following it in the simple sense, but there's a difference between a general memory of Yetziat Mitzrayim fulfilled on a daily basis, could be done with my mind, maybe some words must be uttered, but when it comes to Sipur Yetziat Mitzrayim, Leil Pesach, there's something significant about my mouth moving. There's something notable and noteworthy about me saying these things, even elaborating upon these things, telling others about these things. What's the reason? Why is it that Sipur Yetziat Mitzrayim has this new dimension, this dimension of speech, this dimension of Haggadah, this dimension of dealing with the memory, not merely in my mind, but with my mouth as well? That's what I'd like to, for some moments, address and deal with together with you. It should be noted at the onset, everybody has heard the derasha. The Ba'alei Hasidut certainly are very fond of mentioning that Pesach might be a compound word. Pesach, it's a holiday in which our mouths speak, very much in line with this. But why? Why is speech such an integral facet to the mitzvah? Haggadah, interestingly, the word Haggadah, it's often noted. If anyone's learned Masechet Sukkah or knows the laws of Eruvin, there's a concept known as God, God Asik, God Ahit. Lagud in Aramaic, or Agudah in Hebrew even, means to bring together. Haggadah seems to be some sort of, again, it combines people, my speech, as a way of connecting me with another. It's not merely kept for myself. It's about expressing it to another. It's about getting those words out. It's about being able to articulate and formulate with speech. Again, why is that about Pesach as opposed to any other night of the year? Yes, sir, Rabbi. I just addressed that. I quoted the Gemara and Megillah. The Gemara and Megillah won't suffice with it being with speech unless you have lo tishkach together with zachor. Had it just been zachor, the Gemara is suggesting, it would have been just in my mind.
So why is Zechor Amalek? I'm saying we still have to read it. We still have to say
again,
it.
The Pasuk says zachor et asher asa lecha Amalek, and then it says zachor and lo tishkach. So the rabbis understand that only because it says lo tishkach, which means in my mind, does zachor mean with my mouth. Otherwise, it wouldn't have meant so. That's the halachic determination. That's what's cited. Again, she'agat aryeh mind accord with, does accord with you, that every night it's necessary to be with my mouth. But it's not per se the word that the Torah uses at the very least. The Torah doesn't say every night, V'gadal b'necha. Torah doesn't say something about dibur or amira every night. Even if we ultimately speaking interpret it as speech, as many do, the wording seems to suggest that the speech is less significant than the Haggadah of V'gadal b'necha. So I'd like to advance two different approaches. They're both significant in and of themselves. The first coming from suggest something similar, but the particular pages are from this book. It's called Re'eh De'ah. Re'eh De'ah was written by Rabbi Moshe, not written by, but guided by, and it's from the classes of Rabbi Moshe Shapira, Zichrono Livracha. Rabbi Moshe Shapira, I've mentioned on more than one occasion in classes together. He was a tremendous Jewish thinker, and passed away just a couple of years ago. I had the honor, privilege of hearing many shiurim from him, few of which I actually understood, certainly at the time. But after his death, many of his teachings have been transcribed, written. It was just a couple of weeks ago that Morris Katten discovered some of his writings and said, "Have you ever heard of him?" I said, "Not only have I ever heard about him, I talk about him all the time. I want everyone to read, because now it's even translated into English. They took a lot of his stuff." He was a very deep and profound thinker, but his thought, very much grounded in the world of Maharal and Gaon Mivilna, has a real depth to it, a real beauty in a way of opening up Jewish thought in ways that are not often appreciated and talked about. Anyway, at the conclusion of this book, happens to be on Hilchot De'ot, it's called Re'eh De'ah, but at the very end of the book, and he writes, or he spoke about this on many, many occasions, because this idea is reiterated in many of the other books that are recording his ideas. Here on page 180, if you just read together with me a little bit, we're not necessarily going to read every word, but we'll read a lot of the significant lines and try to piece it together and get the gist of it. He says, Ne'emar b'set Yisrael min Misraim, Beit Yaakov me'am lo'ez hayita Yehuda le'kodcho. The Pasuk says in Tehillim that our exodus from Egypt was not merely from Misraim, it was also me'am lo'ez. And the word lo'ez has to do with speech. It's from a nation of wrong speakers, or maybe of false speakers. Interestingly, the Pasuk in Tehillim describes our departure from Egypt not merely as being one from servitude to freedom, but from one of false speech to seemingly one of a true speech. He goes on, Rabbi Shapira, to point out that the rabbis often understand that word as la'az, not merely as a foreign speech, but even as false. If you'll take a look at maybe the fourth paragraph over here, it says, Yisya Misraim hayita ayide chidush sheteha beritot shenikritu im Avraham Avinu. This is, if you look at the berit with Avraham Avinu, so berit, there was a berit mila, and there was, according to many, a berit halashon. Just even listen to the word berit mila. We oftentimes take for granted that it's known as a berit mila. The word mila, after all, means a word as well. Think for a moment upon entrance into Egypt for Moshe in order to bring Bnei Israel out. What happened in that moment as he's going in? He's almost punished, almost loses his son because there wasn't a berit mila for his child. Right before we leave Egypt as well, there's a command that anyone who's an arel lo yochal bob, korban pesach, interestingly, unlike any other mitzvah per se in the Torah, is preceded with a command that you perform berit mila with each of your children, each of the family members, any male individuals associated with you. Mila, berit, seem to come together in Yitziat Mitzrayim as well. In truth, as we make our way out of Egypt, we set forth into a place known as the Midbar, and Midbar as well seems to be from the Lashon of Midaber or Dibur. Something about the Exodus from Egypt, if you play with the words of the Torah, seems to be leading us from one sort of speech to another, from one mode of existence almost to another, represented through speech. In the notes at the bottom here as well, he quotes the Pasuk in Shemot Perek Yodalit, where immediately before leaving Egypt, we encamp at a place known as Pi HaHirot. Pi HaHirot means the mouth of freedom. It means that freedom was predicated upon mouths. It was our speech in some way which took us out. He goes on and he cites how the Midrash has that when Yosef says to his brothers that Kipi Hamdabir, my mouth is speaking to you. Rashi cites from the Midrash. Yosef says to his brothers, look, I'm speaking Hebrew, a language that nobody here seems to know. Right before the Exodus, long before, at the end of Sefer Bereshit, in Bereshit, Perek Nun, Paro turns to Yosef and he says, go out as your father swore you in. And Rashi, picking up on that, says, why does Paro need to say it's only because your father swore you in to take him out? Again, after the death of Yaakov, Yosef's going to take them out. And says Rashi, quoting from the Midrash, because Paro understood that if he didn't allow for Yosef at this time to fulfill his commitment to his father, then Yosef will break his commitment with Paro. What was Yosef's commitment with Paro? Paro didn't know Lashon HaKodesh. Paro knew all 70 languages, but not Lashon HaKodesh. What's the depth of each one of these? What sort of concept is that again and again? It's something about Hebrew, something about speech, the redemption being predicated on speech. So the suggestion of Rabbi Shapiro, together with many others, and it's really a Maharal thought at its core, is that speech, when we talk about speech in Lashon HaKodesh prism and mindset, has something greater than just the pragmatic, the practical. Speech, you and I generally assume, is the way I get across my intent to you. Lashon HaKodesh has a way for us of representing, again, it could be done in English or in Arabic or in Yiddish, but it can be done really in any language, as long as it's a purposeful language, as long as it's a constructive language, as long as it's speech which is leading to sanctity, holiness, speaking about essence. That's what we refer to when we say Lashon HaKodesh. In other words, the redemption from Egypt then through this prism is one in which I envision a people who are possessed with a sense of mission. To be free means I can speak about matters which are significant. I don't merely talk about sports or politics or I don't know what they're doing or what he's doing or she. I'm able to talk about Kodesh. I'm able to attribute my language, my conversation to matters of significance. That's unique, argues Rabbi Shapiro, to a free individual, to a person imbued with the sanctity of Am Yisrael. You see, when it comes to Lashon HaKodesh in general, the rabbis always refer to Hebrew as Lashon HaKodesh. There's an age-old debate and conversation, disagreement about why it's known as Lashon HaKodesh. What's holy about this language? There is a midrash that says it's the first language with which God created heavens and earth. Harambam seems to take it in the practical direction. He says the language of Hebrew has no bad words. Language of true Hebrew has no curse words. It has no words for sexual activity, has no words for body parts that are the parts that are concealed, etc. That's what Lashon HaKodesh, Bihuda HaLevi, Kuzari, many others disagree. They say, no, what do you mean? Lashon HaKodesh is the language with which God brought forth creation. What it means is there's an essence to it. His speech was the power with which things came to fruition. The difference between the two is not as great as it sounds. In other words, whereas Rabbi Yehuda HaLevi, Maharal, and others are focused in the global or the cosmic sense, this speech is significant because it brings to creations, Harambam says, just appreciate it on your and my own level. What are we using our speech for? Are we using it to talk about sexuality and dirty things? Or are we using it for purposeful directions and mechanisms? Do you understand? In other words, ultimately speaking as human beings, my speech is not per se creating things. I can't speak and poof, here it is. That's Borei Olam. But what does that statement mean? It means that when I use my mouth, or when he, with a capital H, used his mouth, doesn't have one, use speech, doesn't do that. But what it means is that speech represents something purposeful. So the redemption from Egypt then, seen through this prism, bring us back to our original issue, Sipur Yitzhak Mitzrayim, being with speech, It's a night on which we pause and we say, what does it mean to be members of Am Yisrael? To be a member of a Jewish nation, a nation which was freed from labor over there by God, is a nation who is endowed with the ability, the responsibility to speak purposefully. What do you do with your speech? What do you talk about? What do you talk about when you're at a table with someone else? I've mentioned this more than once. It's a bit of musar on our community. I have many friends from rabbinical school and from, kaparat avonot, as Rabbi David Yosef said the other day, Ashkenazic friends. And so early on in the Rabbanut, in the Syrian community, they made fun of me, not for any reason that you'd assume. But one or two of them said, I remember I had friends when I was in high school and I was in this, and they watched TV on Shabbat. I said, but the TV, that's what we're going to make this. And one of my friends, a real Navon, he says, it's not about the TV. I know he didn't know Chedem. I know someone else turns it on. That's not my issue. He said, the issue is that families in your community can't sit around on the couch after dinner and have conversations with one another. They need the distraction. They need the TV on because otherwise they don't know how to have a conversation. That was the pointed rebuke. Kibalti. I couldn't, you can't argue that. I want to argue the whole thing. I want to say we're working on all these sorts of things. But if the claim is you don't know how to have, I say it with a big smile on my face, but I can't wait to get, when I'm with my wife, to get out of weddings, because we can't talk at weddings. Weddings are so loud, you're not able of to have a purposeful conversation. Because as a community, we fail at this. We're great at so many things. We don't know how to talk to one another. We know how to do things for one another in ways that nobody, I think, in the world knows how to do. We don't know how to talk. We don't know how to have purposeful conversations. If we're to pause for a moment and appreciate what Yetziyat Mitzrayim was about, what it means to be a member of a nation who has a responsibility, we are a Lashon. We have the capability of using our Lashon HaKodesh to construct through having constructive conversations. I'd like to, with just a few moments remaining, take it in a little bit of a different angle. So in short, angle number one, Sipur Yetziyat Mitzrayim, as we began with Peri Megadim V'Gadita, speech as opposed to Zechirat Yetziyat Mitzrayim, which is less about speech, more about memory, because speech as a nation of Yisrael, we discovered means to use your tongue purposefully. Lashon HaKodesh means I know how to angle this in the direction of something constructive. Rabbi Soloveitchik, Zichrono Livracha, had a different angle with regards to speech, and very briefly, but very significantly, his general angle, and we'll read a little bit of it, it's from an essay in this book, Confrontation and Other Essays, his general angle is the following. Let's read it even in a nutshell here on page 64 at the very bottom. So at 64 at the very bottom, he writes, redemption, we have stated, is identical with communing, or with the revelation of the word, i.e. the emergence of speech. When a people leaves a mute world and enters a world of sound, speech, and song, it becomes a redeemed people, a free people. In other words, a mute life is identical with bondage. A speech-endowed life is a free life. All he did was say that to be free is to speak. Okay, he hasn't told us why not. Here we go. The slave lives in silence, if such a meaningless existence may be called life. Listen carefully. He has no message to deliver. In contrast with the slave, the free man bears a message, has a good deal to tell, and is eager to convey his life story to anyone who cares to listen. He says, listen to a person who's free. They got plenty to talk about. They have dreams. They have ambitions. We talk to our children before they go to sleep. We tell them stories about when we were younger, about what we're going to do in the future. We plan vacations. We plan life's trajectories. That's what we do because we're free. If you're a poor person, what are you talking about? This is me speaking, right? What are you talking about? You're imagining tomorrow when what? When you go through the same drill, when you wake up at the same time, when you get the same food, when you build another pyramid, is that what you're excited for? When you struggle to exist another day, when you procure, when you get a more small morsel of bread, when you're a free person, you have dreams and you have things you want to talk about. When you're a slave, you have no ability, you have no will to speech. No wonder the Torah has four times emphasized the duty of the father, a liberated slave, to tell his children born into freedom the story of his liberation. Free man who is eager to tell his story is always surrounded by an audience, willing to listen to his story. Do we not know this story? Do we not know about this? I mean, unfortunately, very few remaining, but Yom HaShoah, Holocaust Remembrance Day, do we not have hundreds and thousands of Jews who want to hear someone tell their story? After October 7th, Lehavdil, and to a certain extent, don't we want to just, Joey, did we not in the hospital room sit with a soldier who got injured? All we wanted to do was to have him tell his story. Tell his story. What was his story? He wasn't talking about HaKadosh Baruch Hu in the story that he told us. He wasn't telling us. I mean, he was telling us just his story, and we were enamored. And he just, and in the middle, he said, I remember it vividly. He said, I don't even know why I'm really telling you this, but I feel like there's some sort of objective just being able to tell what happened. So, because as free people, and that's what he was exhibiting in that moment, we just like to tell stories because we have something to talk about. We have something to be thankful for. We have another day to look forward to. The slave has neither a story, writes Rabbi Soloveitchik, nor a curious audience. Nobody wants to listen to the slave's story. Moreover, he is not merely a speechless being, but a mute being, devoid not only of the word, but of the meaningful sound as well. He quotes in page 69 from the Pesukim that describe God listening to us. Listen to the Pesukim right in the middle of the page. It says, Vayhi bayamim harabim ahem, vayamot melech Misraim. Listen to the words that describe Bnei Israel in Egypt. Vayanehu Bnei Israel min ha'avodah. First verb. What's the verb? They moaned, I would translate. Vayanehu, no speech. Vayizaku, they cry out. No speech. Vata'al shav'atam el ha'eluhim min ha'avodah. And their shrieking reaches the heavens. Who were Bnei Israel before being redeemed? A nation without speech. In truth, he quotes in the middle here from Zohar. Zohar says that we experienced in Egypt galut hadibur. Galut hadibur means that as slaves, we had no kol, kof, vav, lamed. We had no sound. We had no voice. We had no ability. It's not because anyone put something on our mouth. We were muzzled just by virtue of being enslaved. There was nothing to talk about. What are you going to dream about? What are you going to describe? What are you going to together be able to look forward to be a free person then? On the flip side of the same coin of what we began the class is just to speak and to realize that my story is significant, to realize that my mission, my ambition, my virtues, my values are something that I'm building, something that I'm working toward, because I can do that as a free person. In short, to sum everything up, we talked about Sipur Yisiat Mitzrayim this morning, and we described how Sipur Yisiat Mitzrayim is very much centered around, grounded by, if you will, speech. For what reason? Well, we said Peri Megadim says from the halachic angle. For what reason? Either because speech as a nation means constructive speech, that's very significant, or maybe a scaling back a little bit just to be able to speak, just to be able to sit back and talk, just to be able to articulate dreams, to talk about who I might want to be, to hit a dead end in the conversation, but to enter into the conversation that exhibits freedom. In short, speech is significant to the holiday of Pesach, as we said earlier, because it teaches us to work on our constructive speech, but it reminds us as well that our speech is significant in and of itself as free people. Baruch Adonai le'olam. Amen ve'amen.